I am Tom Holland, and this is Fitness Disrupted 2.0. All great topics, every single show, if I do say so myself, and I will. Over 400 episodes and counting. 400 plus with Fitness Disrupted, the original feed, and now Fitness Disrupted 2.0. And let me say it at the beginning of this podcast. I normally save it to the end, but it's important. If you haven't rated the show, subscribed, followed, commented, whatever you can do to support it, so greatly appreciated. I am keeping the advertising, as you can tell right now, to a minimum at best, and you will only get the best advertisers, the ones I totally believe in 100%. That's why I switched the feed, so I can control the message, the advertising, everything. It's too important. This is too important. It's our health. It's our wellness. And this is a great topic. So, yes, please. It takes 2 seconds. Rate, subscribe, follow, whatever you can do. Can you count yoga as exercise? Now, as I'm getting ready to do this podcast, I'm thinking like significant number of people who aren't going to listen to it because they just don't do yoga. And a lot of those people are men. The statistics aren't good when it comes to things like yoga and Pilates and those modalities and the number of men who do it. It's increasing. Years ago, it was like 10% or less. And the statistics and research I loved into that was many of the men, the majority of the men who did go, at least at that time, and I would argue it's still very similar, went for two reasons or a combination of the two, one or the other or both, and it's usually both, that their doctor said they had to, should, they were injured or had pains, and their significant other said you had to go as well. And so they were generally brought to yoga by a significant other and after they had issues. Go before you have issues. I'm getting ahead of myself. I say that at the beginning of every podcast. But this question, can you count yoga as exercise? It's a common question I get, and it's a formatted question that I get in so many different other ways. So in other words, like, can you count swimming as strength? Can you count, you fill in the blank, running as strength? And vice versa. Can you count, you know, your strength as cardio if you do circuit training? Here's the quick answer, people. You can call it and count it any way you want. I'm not going to argue that, like, top line kind of answer. Of course, call it whatever you want, but I'm going to give you the science. And there's common sense involved with this, especially when it comes to yoga. And I don't have, you know, a bias towards yoga or for or against. My bias is the science and for you to get your results based on the science. And I want you to get the greatest results in the shortest amount of time with the least likelihood of injury. So if I could say to you, yes, yoga counts as everything. You could, it's cardio, it's strength, it's flexibility, there's cognitive benefits. You don't have to do anything else. I wish I could say that about anything, but I can't. And truthfully, if we only did one thing, we would get really, really bored with it. And so, of course, you can count yoga as whatever you want. But what is exercise? Like, and this question, by the way, I answered it in my book, Beat the Gym, which I think I wrote in 2010. Came out in 2010, I believe. So, you know, 12 years ago. Of course, it's going to come up over and over again. But every day I do, you know, my quick Google search of the news of the day, see what's trending, what's up there, and this was there. Verbatim, can you count yoga as exercise? So I said, you know what? Don't think I've done it in any of those 400 plus shows. Let's do it. And even if I did do it, it's worth repeating. But I'm Pretty sure I didn't. So I'm going to talk or give you four studies. Two cardio, two strength. I'm not going to go super deep into them. These shows are shorter now, and we don't have to. We don't have to. But we're going to look at the abstracts, and we're going to make our decisions based on the factors we always do. The science, common sense, our experience, anecdotal data. We take all of that. And common sense is a huge one here, people. Common sense is a huge one. But the question itself, I have to just kind of dissect quickly. Because there's always a feeling, at least to me, when I read that headline, can you count yoga as exercise? And I get it. People want to know how to classify what they do. But I often feel like it's the least possible dose, right? Those articles, research, not crazy about, but I understand, again, why they're done. Like, what's the least amount of exercise we can do? And my line to that is, if you're looking for the least amount of exercise you can do, you're not doing the right exercise. You haven't found it. Movement feels really good. Sitting on the couch for a long periods of time doesn't. And so if you're looking for the least dose, you got to keep looking for the exercise that you're going to enjoy. Ultimately, that a coach is going to say, or a trainer, you got to pull back. When I was a trainer, the last couple of years, you know, I'd super motivated type A clients. I had all types of clients, by the way, but, you know, that was a significant number. As you get towards the end of that phase of your career, if you're someone who does what I did, you know, you've got the CEOs and the celebrities and people who are really motivated to do it. And so the job of the coach, the trainer in that stage and with those people and that clientele are to pull them back. And so the question itself, I think, you know, needs to be clarified in that way. And so what is exercise, right? Can you count yoga as exercise? I already kind of broke it down into, is it strength? Is it cardio? What is your goal? And so when we look at that question, can you count yoga as exercise? We just start to look at what yoga is. And this is a problem in a half hour show. There's so many different forms of yoga. There's so many different forms. Some are more challenging than others in different ways. But as the couple studies are that I'm going to outline shortly will show, we can still glean a lot from them, right? And so we have to look at that question. Can you count yoga as exercise if you're trying to lose weight? You can. But how powerful is that going to be to getting you results? I have to say this, and this was in my book, Beat the Gym. And these are the type of observations that often get people angry, but this is true life, people. When I owned the gym, and when I worked in gyms, but especially when I owned one for that short amount of time, we said I would never do it because it's not what I'm about, trying to get as many people to sign up and then go away. That's the gym model. That's not me. I want you to get results. I want you to show up all the time. And I sold so many memberships because I would argue I had a really good pitch and a really good gym. Anyway, I could tell, and still to this day, if I walk into a gym, especially ones where there are a bunch of studios, and see the people that are waiting outside for the gym or for the class, I can start to really break down what that class is going to be based on who is waiting outside. It's self-selecting to some degree, people. So in other words, this is a long way around of saying when people would say, well, yoga has to be great for weight loss. Look at those people in yoga class. Well, guess what? A significant number of those people walked in looking the way they do. They didn't lose weight from that class itself. The vast majority, because of the science I'm going to bring, don't start getting angry, because I'm going to give you the cardiovascular effects of the majority of these types of yoga. And that's not to say the benefits aren't enormous. It's not an all or nothing proposition, which is the arguments people have on just about everything today. but not when it comes to exercise. Not here. Okay? But yes, basketball doesn't make people taller. Taller people choose basketball, by and large. And a lot of that holds true with modes of exercise. Cycling, swimming, things you enjoy, things you are genetically built for. All right? And so when we ask that question, can you count yoga as exercise? Are you asking for weight loss? Are you asking, is it cardio? Are you getting cardiovascular benefits? Are you getting strength benefits? Are you getting mental and cognitive benefits? Is that the exercise we're talking about? And then are we talking about like improved health metrics, like your cholesterol and things like that? So there's a lot going on there. And again, it's often said in a way instead of, right? So I don't have to do something else. You don't have to do anything, but I want you to get the healthiest benefits and ascribe these types, these modalities in the correct component of fitness, because that's what we're talking about here. There's five components of fitness. When you open up the textbooks, I added the sixth at one of my first podcasts, and other fitness people do as well. And so the five components of fitness, I'm going to repeat this stuff over and over, and you're going to know it, be able to regurgitate it at cocktail parties to your friends, whatever. Body composition, flexibility, muscular strength, muscular endurance, and cardiorespiratory endurance. We can combine muscular strength and muscular endurance. We're talking strength there, right? We're talking muscular strength, cardiorespiratory endurance. Let's just talk cardiovascular fitness, right? Body composition is how much fat mass versus how much muscle mass, and flexibility. The sixth one I throw in is balance. And that will come up with yoga, obviously. But we're going to ascribe those components to the exercise based on the science behind that modality. And body composition is basically diet, or not diet, it's weight, is what I'm trying to say, right? Weight loss, weight gain, muscular, how healthy a, you know, body composition you have. I got to go to the overload principle, right? Because that's what we're talking about here. Let's just take it down to its the basics, people. I've taken yoga. Many of you have as well, especially if you're probably listening to this episode. What do you feel? What do you feel? Does your heart rate get really elevated? Do you get out of breath? When you're done, are you sore? Are you muscularly sore? Right? Are you sore the same way you are after a strength workout? If you do it for a long period of time, do you feel like you're improving your balance and your coordination? Do you see changes in your body composition? Let me say this, forgot. Whenever I discuss the self-selection part of yoga and different or similar type of modalities, a lot of people lose weight when they go to things like yoga and Pilates and different modalities that attract a certain demographic because you change what you eat. Because you start to talk to people and go, oh, what are you eating? Or they literally will have a, you know, healthy options right there at the gym. Or people leave yoga and go to do what? Eat. And so you change habits. And so, yes, in a great connected way, how many times do I bring that up? That this is systems theory. It's all connected. Start taking yoga. Start feeling better about yourself. Start hanging out with different people, learning about health and wellness, learning about healthier foods. And so, sure, you're going to lose weight in that way. But it's not from the class itself, right? Is there cardiovascular benefits? Going to get to it. Are there strength benefits? Going to get to that as well. Okay, but we go back to that overload principle. We need to overload our cardiorespiratory systems and our muscular systems for change to occur. Significant change. And we also have to do that to our cognitive, to our mental side. And that is a huge part of yoga. And you know, you can read the articles and great books on how many in that yoga, in the yoga world believe that typically, Americans, we have watered down yoga, made it so much less about the mental side and so much more about the physical and doing, you know, maybe more than we're supposed to as far as focusing on that physical side. All right. One other quick point to bring up. Research is there and growing into yoga, but it's not great. It's not great. I'm going to give you these four studies and look at them quickly, but much more needs to be done. And we are talking about so many different things when it comes to yoga. I just outlined them. Strength, cardio, mental, balance. There's a lot going on there, which is a good thing. It's a good thing. Okay, one of the first supposed randomized trial experiment on yoga was back in 1975 in The Lancet. And it showed that yoga was pretty darn good, actually more effective than relaxation for reducing high blood pressure. It was a small study, though. It was only 34 people. All of them had high blood pressure, so that was an issue. Like, how will it affect people who don't? It was a good start. Small study, and many of these studies into yoga are, for obvious reasons. But I grabbed a couple lines in doing research for the show from people who were talking about the studies on yoga. And this one's great. I mean, jumped out at me. What you put into a yoga intervention probably impacts what you get out. I have been saying this about strength training studies and even cardiovascular, but especially strength training studies. Just because someone goes through an 8-week, 12-week, 16-week, whatever, how long the study is, and does the exercises that are prescribed, are they using the right weight? Are they using the right form? Who are the instructors? There's so many variables involved. Now, I know that we control for so many of those, but I still believe that is a huge, huge issue that's not discussed enough. And one final line that kind of goes to this as well. Someone said when discussing yoga studies, many papers on yoga don't have enough of an in-depth description of what they mean by yoga. What was the level of training of yoga therapists? How did they choose different postures or breathing exercises? I would say the same thing about so many strength studies. And when I say that, I'm generally talking about the studies that say there weren't effects. Like the greatest example of that being when I got published my response to a New York Times article way back at the beginning of my career, and it was an article on non-responders, that there were people that would exercise and see no results. That to me is insane. It violates the overload principle. And if you stress the body, it's going to adapt. It's going to change. And so it's so great to finally start reading lines like that where people start to break it down and go, wait a minute. There's other things going on here. All right, got to look at these studies. First one, Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research, 2005. So a little while back, August, and the title is The Metabolic Cost of Hatha Yoga. All right, I'm just going to read you the abstracts from these. We're not going super deep into them because we're just going to pull out what we need to determine the metabolic and heart rate responses, okay? Metabolic and heart rate responses of Hatha Yoga. 26 women, again, not a huge sample size, 19 to 40 years old, performed a 30-minute Hatha Yoga routine of supine lying, sitting, and standing asanas, which are postures. Subjects followed identical videotape sequences of Hatha Yoga asanas. Okay, now they go in this abstract, mean physiological responses were compared to the physiological responses of resting in a chair and walking on a treadmill. Okay, so three different forms of exercise, if you will. You got the yoga, you've got resting in a chair, which isn't really exercise, but that's kind of a baseline, and walking on a treadmill at 3.5 miles per hour. Okay, here's where they go during the 30-minute Hatha yoga routine, mean absolute oxygen consumption, and they go through all the numbers. VO2, relative VO2, percentage maximal oxygen consumption. And they compare those, you don't need to know, just confuse you, all of these numbers with resting in a chair and walking on a treadmill at 3.5 miles per hour. What did they find? The Hatha yoga routine in this study required a 14.5% VO2, maximal oxygen consumption, so 14.5%, which can be considered a very light intensity and significantly lighter then 44.8 VO2 for walking at 3.5 miles per hour. The intensity of hatha yoga may be too low to provide a training stimulus for improving cardiovascular fitness. Okay, so this is cardio. Can you count that type of yoga done that way as cardio? You can, but you'd be making a mistake. Okay, if I were your coach, if I were your trainer, if I'm someone who's trying to get you the best benefits so you can live your best life, it would be a mistake, according to this study, to do that because it's not a high enough response. Okay, doesn't mean there aren't incredible benefits. And we're going to get to those, all right? Final line from this study, although previous research suggests that hatha yoga is an acceptable form of physical activity for enhancing muscular fitness and flexibility. I like the terms they use. These data demonstrate that hatha yoga may have little, if any, cardiovascular benefit. Okay. According to this study, don't count it as cardio. Next one, does practicing hatha yoga satisfy recommendations for intensity of physical activity, which improves and maintains health and cardiovascular fitness? This was 2007, complementary and alternative medicine, again, a little while back, but it works for us. Little is known about the metabolic and heart rate responses to a typical hatha yoga session. The purposes of this study were to determine whether a typical yoga practice using various postures meets the current recommendations for levels of physical activity required to improve and maintain health and cardiovascular fitness, to determine the reliability of metabolic costs of yoga across sessions, to compare the metabolic costs of yoga practices to those of treadmill walking. Okay, so is a similar type study. In this observational study, 20 intermediate to advanced level yoga practitioners aged average age around 31 performed an exercise routine inside a human respiratory chamber. So that's indirect calorimetry, which is a great way to measure this stuff, while wearing heart rate monitors. Exercise routine consisted of 30 minutes of sitting, 56 minutes of beginner level hatha yoga, also administered by video, and 10 minutes of treadmill walking at, this was slower, 3.2 and 4.8 kilometers per hour each. They did all those same measures. You know, they're looking at VO2. They're looking at heart rate. They're wearing heart rate monitors. They're in this chamber, which is, again, really good for measuring what we want to know. What did they find? Metabolic costs of yoga averaged across the entire session represent low levels of physical activity, are similar to walking on a treadmill at 3.2 kilometers per hour. So that's under 2 miles per hour. And do not meet recommendations for physical activity for improving or maintaining health or cardiovascular fitness. I'm going to argue or have a problem with health. Cardiovascular fitness, again, heart rate wasn't elevated enough. Health, I think that's a problem. Take that word out because, as I'm going to finish up with, we're talking stress here. We're talking so many other things that you can't measure the way they were trying to measure it. Okay. Yoga practice incorporating sun salutation postures exceeding the minimum bout of 10 minutes may contribute some portion of sufficiently intense physical activity to improve cardiorespiratory fitness in unfit or sedentary individuals. If you're just starting out, great way to get started. You might get out of breath depending on what you're doing. Go by how you feel. Listen to your body. The measurement of energy expenditure across yoga sessions is highly reliable. Okay, I got to keep going here. Two studies on strength. First one, strength and conditioning research. Again, 2013 March, Bikram yoga training and physical fitness in healthy young adults. I'm going to skip ahead here. The purpose of this exploratory study was to examine the effect of short-term Bikram yoga training on general physical fitness. Young healthy adults were randomized to yoga training, 24 sessions in 8 weeks or a control group. Each yoga training session consisted of 90 minutes, more than 30, right? Standardized supervised postures performed in a heated and humidified studio. Isometric deadlift strength, hand grip strength, lower back hamstring and shoulder flexibility, resting heart rate and blood pressure. A lot of things were measured before and after training. Yoga subjects exhibited increased deadlift strength, substantially increased lower back hamstring flexibility, okay, increased shoulder flexibility, and modestly decreased body fat. They lost a little bit of weight compared with the control groups. In summary, the short-term yoga training protocol produced beneficial changes in musculoskeletal fitness that were specific to this training stimulus. So there are some strength benefits. and flexibility benefits, some good ones. I would argue, again, limited time here, the deadlift, I think a lot of that, my guess is the neuromuscular connections, right? Your body awareness that yoga provides helps you recruit more muscle fibers for another day. All right, final one. This was titled Meta-Analysis of the Effect of Yoga Practice on Physical Fitness in the Elderly. This was a 2021 study. The purpose of this study was to meta-analyze the effects of yoga intervention on physical fitness in the elderly. They looked at 656 papers. It's a meta-analysis, right? They cut it down to 12. The main conclusions are as follows. Yoga practice showed moderately positive effects on muscle strength, balance, mobility, and lower body flexibility, but had no significant effect on cardiorespiratory endurance and upper body flexibility. That surprises me, the upper body part. I'm guessing it's just the exercises they chose or moves they chose, postures. Second, subgroup analysis showed that subjects in their 60s and 70s in yoga practice for 9 to 12 weeks had a large positive effect on physical fitness. That's health, right? Yoga is a multimodal activity that improves muscle strength, balance, and flexibility in the elderly, and physical activity policies should continue to promote yoga as an activity that enhances physical and mental well-being in this population. All right, bring it all together. What came up frequently? I would still do cardio. Your heart is really important. If you're doing some form of yoga where you get out of breath, great. But I still think you need to do some cardio. We need to move. And when I say cardio, move, right? I don't like the term exercise anymore the way I used to. It's a negative connotation. Many people think you have to go to the gym. Many people think you have to do things you don't want to do. Common sense. When you do any form of exercise, how challenging is it to you? Cardiovascularly, strength training wise? Listen, a lot of the people who do yoga too have issues like bone density, right? Sarcopenia, we want to preserve muscle mass as we get older. Is there a strength training component, or, you know, benefit to yoga? Absolutely. Do we need a little bit more? I would argue yes. I want you to strength train. I want you to do cardio. I want you to do something like yoga or Pilates, something that you're getting so many benefits, the balance, coordination, flexibility, and the mental. You're also getting confidence. I have a great friend who started yoga as like his first real form of exercise. And the confidence it gave him and has continued to give him is amazing. I don't care about being right, people. I don't want to argue about what you want to call it. We're going to talk about the science. And I don't want you to say, I'm going to do X for my cardio when it's not giving you cardiovascular benefits or enough cardiovascular benefits to live your best life. It's like telling you to take a drug and telling you that it gives you benefits that it really doesn't, aren't as strong as it's saying. And you're not doing something else. You're not taking another drug. I don't know why I'm using the drug analogy, analogy, but you get my point. Strength training, overload your muscles, okay? Cardio, get that heart rate up, sometimes easy, sometimes intervals. And guys, especially if you got, you know, have hesitations about working on your flexibility and all of those great things, balance and coordination that comes with a modality like yoga, there you go. But there's no one form of exercise that does it all. All right? All right. As I said at the beginning of the show, Tom H. Fit, Instagram, Tom H. Fit. His Twitter, you can reach out, ask questions, subscribe to the show, as I said. You see, I got worked up. Might not have been able to tell, but I did. Where was I going? You go to fitnessdisrupted.com or teamholland.com. Email me through the site. These shows are short and quick, but where there's going to be so many of them, there's so much more information I want to give to you. I got to stop saying that, but it's true. Do those things that allow you to do the thing that you love. If you love yoga, do strength, you know, do enough strength training, do enough cardio so you can do yoga for the rest of your life. We all control three things: how much we move, what we put into our mouths, and our state of mind, and that is awesome. I am Tom Holland. This is Fitness Disrupted. believe in yourself.